Hi there. Yes, this is Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer. And yes, clearly, I am not Tom. So let me explain. I'm Liz Beatty, host of Here and There, a Canadian Geographic travel podcast. And as Tom and I run into each other on the road for our respective shows quite often, it occurred to us, why not share some of our favorite episodes? It is such an honor to guest host for Tom's show this week with one of our fave episodes at CanGeo, and one that entwines a region and a major historic figure with strong roots on both sides of the border. And if you're curious, you can catch a few more episodes of Here and There, a Canadian Geographic Travel Podcast, on the CanGeo site or wherever you get your podcasts. Hope you enjoy the show. Liz Beatty here. Say Nova Scotia, and so many amazing sites and locales come to mind. The Bay of Fundy and the Three Sisters, Halifax and the Citadel, and of course, anywhere along the Cabot Trail in Cape Breton. So it surprised me to find a place nowhere near the Atlantic Ocean that attracted musicians, dancers, international yachters, inventors, and more. And for a very, very long time. The inland town of Bedeque, on the shores of the Rideau Lakes estuary, might easily be overlooked as Cabot Trail-bound travelers head for Cape Breton's famous and fabulous ocean vistas. But that would be a huge mistake. In fact, I would argue that the best home base for exploring the famed coastal trail and understanding what makes this whole region so special is this central and extraordinary village and estuary inside the famous island. And that's all I'm going to say. Let's get this story started. Some of the best stories start in the most random way, like this one. Okay, so this is interesting. Alexander Graham Bell once stated, "Traveled the globe, have seen Canadian, American Rockies, Andes, Alps, the Highlands of Scotland, but for simple beauty, Cape Breton outrivals them all." Oh. This is an actual research voice memo that I recorded on April 26th this year and sent to myself. My way of ensuring possibly neat ideas don't get lost, scribbled on crumpled receipts and such. All this started as I'm scoping out a new assignment in Nova Scotia for Canadian Geographic magazine. And as is my quirky custom, when I'm planning a trip, I check out local real estate. I've done this for decades for trips all over the world. Yes, I can tell you how much a small chateau costs in the Dordogne, France. Weird, I know. It just helps me get inside local life. You know, to understand the hot places to live, standard of living. Even real estate agent blurbs can be revealing. Anyway, because we have good friends who live near Cape Breton, I enlarge the realtor.ca map. And as I read on through this particular listing, I think to myself, wow, this is no ordinary place. Let's see here. It says, a sentiment also expressed by his great-grandson, Gilbert Melville Grosvenor. Reflecting on Maskills Harbor. That harbor is probably my favorite harbor on the entire planet. It cannot be denied that Maskills Harbor is special. Wow. First time offered for sale since the original land grant to the Macleans, hailing from Scotland in the early 1800s. Generations of lighthouse keepers at Gillis Point, which is now out of operation and an historic site. Well, now, I am very used to exuberant real estate prose, but there is something so specific and so over the top in this profile. And what intrigues me even more, looking at the map, this harbor, this Rideau Lake estuary, is nowhere near the 13,000 kilometers of spectacular Atlantic coastline that have made this province famous around the world. So this iconic inventor of modern times, I mean, he invents the telephone. He helps found the National Geographic Society. His great-grandson, a former head of the National Geographic Society, These people are calling this waterway, these coves, these harbors, sacred ground in Nova Scotia. Huh. Come hell or high water, I am going to figure out a way to get there and discover for myself what makes this place so special.
What a pretty driveway in!
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
It's gorgeous.
That's Halifax real estate agent Cheryl Deschamps, and this is, yes, Maskells Harbor.
Oh my gosh, this is so beautiful.
This is beautiful, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, this is part of it. Do you want to just take a little walk down?
Yeah, sure.
Her genuine affection for this protected harbor is obviously authentic and not uncommon among locals and sailors from far and wide. Indeed, as we'll learn, visitors can charter a boat moor in this harbor and swim up to enjoy this beach like a local.
The yachts will come down, the sailboats here, and they come in. And this little clothesline here keeps a little booklet. And there's regulars that will, you know, if nobody's here, they will come and leave a note for the family.
She echoes again those famous sentiments of Alexander Graham Bell and his descendants.
He said he'd been to lots of places in the world, but this is one of his favorite. We're right there, Maskell's Harbor.
I stand for a few moments at the water's edge, crystal clear for as far as I can see. To the left, there's a majestic red sandstone promontory. And to the right, our next stop, a long elevated headland with a classic Nova Scotia scene that does indeed beckon. And where we'll meet the vendor of this property. A few minutes' drive. Up into the headland, the threatening clouds part as if on cue.
Isn't this insane? Oh my God. It's so stunningly
you can
beautiful.
Eat it.
Illuminating the iconic white pyramidal style lighthouse with red roof at the far end of a very long, freshly cut lawn.
Jacinta, nice to meet you.
You too.
Very nice to meet you.
This is 73-year-old Jacinta McKinnon. Nay, McLean, and we are at the historic Gillis Point Lighthouse. Automated in 1967 and discontinued in 2011, this cherished landmark is now a National Historic Site.
Michael, this is the caretaker up here.
Hi, Michael.
Michael McNeil, what do you think? McNeil or not?
Yeah.
The McNeils, then very soon after the McLeans, kept this lighthouse going. Since its kerosene lamp was first lit in 1895, Jacinta's grandfather took over in 1897, and when he passed away tragically very young, Jacinta's grandmother took over for 30 years.
And she was the only female lighthouse keeper
in Nova Scotia at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow.
Jacinta's father and her seven siblings lived here and carried on the traditions of lighthouse keeping after her mother died very young. As Jacinta runs to get the lighthouse key, Cheryl and I look around, reflecting on what their life here must have been like.
Unbelievable.
This is where they grew up. They must have had some fun.
What a life,
running
eh?
Wild.
I mean, just something out of a storybook.
With pictures in hand, Jacinta shares more recollections of growing up free range, growing their own food.
Oh yeah, you didn't sit at the table and not do your weeding and hoeing and
learning to light the kerosene lamp, getting about in winter by horse and sleigh. Mm-hmm.
And that's not so many years ago, because we were living here then when we were doing this. Yeah. I remember this.
Yeah.
But it's not until she takes us up to the top of this old structure. 74 feet above the high water mark, visible for 14 miles, that the full history and majesty of this harbor becomes clear. While the land here is a park, this lighthouse is not open to the public. And for sure, this interior has seen better days. But Jacinta still zips up and down these steep stair ladders like she's 10 years old again. At the top,
this is where the light was.
We inspect where the lantern would have been. Then she suggests we crawl one by one out a small hatch to the narrow walkway around the lantern windows. I'm not so sure of her assurances.
Yeah, it's pretty sturdy. Plenty solid.
I'll let the solid
all the way. Just don't be leaning up against it.
Yeah.
Be careful.
But the view of what makes Maskell's Harbor such a safe haven is so clear.
Yeah, it gets really open here. You can see how a lot of the sailboats would be pretty happy to find this.
Yep. Harbor. This harbor in particular.
See, that nice sandbar is the main feature for protecting it.
Right.
They can get in behind.
Long before Jacinta's time, ships of industry would anchor in Maskell's to ride out bad weather and tides to help them navigate the Bering Strait to the south.
Didn't have engines, and they had to go through the Grand Aris Bridge up here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
An avid sailor herself, Jacinta remembers well the yachts that used to moor here in her childhood. Many of these would have been members of America's oldest and most prestigious yachting club. Indeed, the Cruising Club of America was actually founded in Maskell's Harbor with the help of the region's most famous family. To learn more about all of this, Jacinta says we should go to another very special harbor on this Bredour Lakes estuary, where Alexander Graham Bell began building his beloved Ben Bragg Estate in 1889. It's not far. The village of Bedeck is due west from Maskell's as the crow flies, not far at all. And while the drive is divine, it is far from direct. First, we must weave south toward Little Narrows.
Little Narrows, that's where the ferry goes.
Then we turn north again on the Trans-Canada Highway, around and past more Bredour Lake coves and inlets. Somewhere past the turn to Margery Harbor, we see the sign.
I think we're here. The village of Bedeck.
Now, Bedeck is one of the few Nova Scotia place names with Mi'kmaq roots. And it's not a big place, a little over 800 permanent residents, many with names and painted wood houses dating back to Loyalist times. And for sure, the village swells each summer as this safe harbor hidden behind Kidston Island welcomes the world by land and by water. It doesn't take long to learn. There are three places where you'll find out most of what you should know about this village and surrounds. A short walk from our historic Dunlap Inn, right on the water, we find the first.
I will, in fact, study the menu right now.
The freight shed right on the wharf is in the middle of town. It seems more like a hopping community center than a restaurant pub, although it does the latter stylishly and deliciously too. Of course, the seafood is to die for. Anyone you need to meet, anything you need to know, you can probably find it here. Including a history lesson from the seasonal local Jamie Fagan, one of the many Americans who consider Bredour Lakes and Bedeck a second home, and long before Alexander Graham Bell and his wealthy American wife.
My great-great-great-great-grandparents were Loyalists, right? And they lived in New Hampshire, and then they went through the Revolutionary War. So what did they do? They moved to Canada because they were Loyalists.
Of course.
And so that's what they did. They went across from the United States into Canada, to Nova Scotia, to Mabu.
And over breakfast the next day at the freight shed, we learn why sailing in this saltwater estuary is so world-class.
My name is Paul Jameson, and I live in Bedeck here, and we've started a charter catamaran business approximately 6 years ago, I guess. We started before we had...
This former RCMP officer and now entrepreneur has sung the praises of sailing here to veteran sailors far and wide, and some of these claims to fame are surprising.
Maybe it's their best-kept secret, but the Bredour Lakes have been... famous from the Cruising Club of America, which started 100 years ago, and they still come back every 4 years. So their water temperatures here, we see 78 degrees Fahrenheit, which is, I guess, around 23 degrees Celsius, somewhere around there. So that surprises a lot of people. So we're the warmest waters north of the Carolinas.
Wow.
So that's something, yes.
That is something.
Yeah, the big difference is you can always see land. We're surrounded by mountains. And the water temperature, again, being warm, there's really no road waves, there's no fog in this area here, which would surprise a lot of people because...
And why do you think that is?
We're inland. I mean, this is an inland. We're 13% of Cape Breton, that's inside.
But you know, no conversation here seems to go on too long without some mention of Alexander Graham Bell and his descendants. Like Bredore Yacht Club Commodore Peter Patterson talking about Bell helping form their club.
Bell was instrumental in forming the club in 1904.
Or Paul describing Alexander Graham Bell's granddaughter, close to 100, sailing the Elsie, a boat Bell had made for his daughter.
Well, the Elsie is probably certainly one of the boats that people would take notice of because it was Alexander Graham Bell's granddaughter and she sailed it up to, she died when she was 102, I believe, so she was on the boat for even close to 100. She enjoyed going out for a sail.
But the one I love best is Paul's story about Bell's great-grandson, Gilbert Melville Grosvenor, the one who is a former chair of the National Geographic Society, and who, in his own special way, put Bedeck on the map, so to speak.
He said, well, Paul, he said, you know, I travel around the world and lecture everywhere. He said, back, you know, in the magazine that we printed, you always had a, you know, world atlas type of thing. And he said, you know, like New York has a certain size bold print, London does, Mexico City, all the large cities in the world, he said. But he said, people didn't realize I always put Bedeck in there with the same big bold print. And he said, I'd be lecturing somewhere in the world, and he said that somebody would say, you know, Gil, I've been to New York, but I've never heard of how many millions of people live in Bedeck.
So at a glance, on any given National Geographic world map, during his tenure, there was Paris, New York, London, Tokyo, and of course, Bedeck. The next morning is clear but blustery. It seems like a good time to take in this full Cape Breton landscape that Bell so adored. We're off on the Cabot Trail. Cutting across to Margaree Harbour on Cape Breton's west coast, we head north to the Acadian village of Cheticamp, then on to the stunning lookout at Cape Rouge. The Skyline Trail is next, 7.5 clicks hugging the coastline around the Gulf of the St. Lawrence, and then we're told to watch for whales at Pleasant Bay. Next, we stop for a stroll over the massive reddish boulder seemingly thrown up on the shoreline at Lackey's Head. Heading back down to Bedeck, we spot the incredibly scenic Celtic Lodge. No surfers on English Beach this day. And finally, back to Bedeck. We've set aside the afternoon for one last important stop. After the freight shed, it is the second important place to learn what makes these Bredore lakes what they are. It's just a 4-minute walk from our Dunlap Inn to the Alexander Graham Bell Museum in Bedeck. There is so much to see and learn here, a truly wonderful museum, including fascinating artifacts of his life and a vast array of his inventions, very large and small. But there's one big truth that I take away from our 2.5 hours here. Bell may well have had a tremendous impact on his Bedeck community and the surrounding Bredore Lakes region. But this community and this landscape also profoundly transformed Bell. With Bell born in Edinburgh, Scotland in 1847, before emigrating to Canada in 1870, it's little wonder Cape Breton's Highlander culture and landscape felt like home. After a few summers visiting the area, Bell and his wife Mabel broke ground on their beloved Ben Bragg summer home in 1889, a short row away from Bedeck Harbour. From that moment, they were determined to become part of this community. Bell quickly abandoned stiff collars and morning coats, while the reserved Scots most here for about three generations at that time, welcomed him into their fold, this exotic fellow with his British accent and wealthy American wife. He even joined a chorus of local men who met on Sunday evenings to sing Scottish ballads. Mabel started a sewing school to help local girls develop a skill and some financial independence, and this soon blended with a discussion club like those she hosted among the social elite of Washington, D.C. The club grew to 41 women gathering at Ben Bragg to crochet and needlepoint, then discuss issues of the day, have a good old gossip, then dinner, and remarkably, at the time, bringing together Catholics and Protestants sitting side by side. The welcome, the total lack of pretension of this Bridor Lakes world, changed them both. Mabel, who was deaf, felt less stigmatized by her different speech and her need to watch people's mouths so she could read their lips. And outside the social constraints and the snobbery of elite Washington society, there was this passion for discovery in Bell that somehow unleashed. And he began to pursue it, staying through the winters too at Ben Bragg. I bought Charlotte Gray's best-selling biography, The Reluctant Genius, at the Museum Gift Shop. In the book, Bell's daughter Daisy is quoted saying of Bell at Ben Bragg, "He could let go of himself and be as elemental as he pleased, floating in the water by hour, particularly at night, smoking a cigar and looking up at the stars." There's a story, too, how Bell set off to see how a scientific man could survive stark naked on an island here with just a penknife. Bell worked, too, on an early form of genetics that might help local sheep farmers. He theorized that multi-nippled sheep might be more inclined to deliver multiple births, thus growing herds faster. He was wrong and just ended up with the biggest flock of multi-nippled sheep in Nova Scotia. But the point is, something began to change in Bell within this inspiring landscape and this accepting, non-judgmental community. As Arthur Gray put it, his brilliant mind here roamed unfettered across the scientific landscape and released the essence of his genius, which was this extraordinary ability to make surprising connections between unrelated fields. And multi-nippled sheep notwithstanding, the work he did in and around Vidette Harbor was almost as astounding as inventing the telephone. Notable men of science and invention began coming to Bedeck, and inspired by bald eagles soaring in updrafts created by the cliffs off Ben Bragg, the focus became flying machines. And by 1909, Bell and his associates carried out the first powered flight in the British Empire on the frozen harbor at Bedeck. Their tricycle design of landing gear is still the standard of aircraft today. And the learning from this aircraft, the Silver Dart, was transferred to work on hydrofoil boats, culminating in the success of the HD4, setting the record for the world's fastest boat in 1919, almost 71 miles per hour. And you guessed it, in Bedeck Harbor. Sadly, within a few years, diabetes claimed Bell at his home in Bedeck. The village switchboard was flooded with calls from around the world. In a telegram, the 29th President of the United States, Warren G. Harding, wrote, "In common with his countrymen, I've learned to revere him as a great benefactor of the human race and one of the foremost Americans of all generations. High praise from the highest office in that land. Every AT&T phone on the continent was silent for 1 minute to honor the passing of Alexander Graham Bell." Still, the community of Bedeck that laid Bell to rest on August 4th, 1922, including many of the men he sang Scottish ballads with every Sunday evening, they knew that this Canadian's true home was Ben Bragg, Bedeck, Nova Scotia, and the endless coves and inlets, like Maskell's Harbor, that Bell loved to explore on these Bridor Lakes. Now, there's just one more place, or perhaps more accurately, one point of view that any visitor here needs to experience. I mean, to truly understand what makes this village, this estuary, so extraordinary. And it's where all the things that beguiled and transformed Alexander Graham Bell seem to come together, at least for me.
It's going to be a bit chilly.
Yeah, it is.
It's our last morning in the village. We meet Paul Jameson on the Vedeck Wharf next to his 45-foot sleek catamaran. He welcomes us aboard along with our now old friend Jacinta, Paul's daughter Tracy, and multi-award-winning local singer-songwriter and producer Keith Mullins.
This is Keith.
Hi, Keith.
Liz.
Hi, Tracy. Liz and Tim.
Ahead on this clear, blustery early June day, we're about to soak in a few hours of this world-class sailing haven. Yes, its physical beauty, but also the innate creative gestalt of this place, and embracing its sense of community that inspired Bell and so many others who live here and who come back year after year. It's not long after we push off that Jacinta pulls out her fiddle, with Keith watching closely on his guitar as she finds her key.
Right now?
I don't know.
I can tell you after a while. What's the first note? Oh. Jacinta goes on to regale us with songs that she and some of her family have written, jigs she's known forever. And as Keith's foot keeps beat, we sail out past the historic Kidston Island Lighthouse on almost every local postcard. Soon, we're looking onto the massive headland of Bell's Benbrog Estate and coursing through the waters where the Silver Dart and the HD4 made history. Then Keith shares stories of people here who inspired his remarkable musical career.
From the time I was like 3 years old, my seat was to the left of my aunt Flo Sampson, was her name. She was kind of like an idol to me. She played with my granddad since she was like grade six. You know, she was making like, she's like 70, 76, 77 now. And she still will play all night long, play tunes all night long. And she would play anything from like fiddle tunes to blues and jazz, Beatles and all kinds of different stuff. It's kind of where I learned how to play. And that would be Gordy's mom.
Right.
The guy, he wrote, so my first cousin wrote Jesus Take the Wheel for Carrie Underwood.
Okay.
Yeah, so his mom is kind of...
Carrie Underwood again.
Oh, yeah.
And as if all this isn't privilege enough, Jacinta pulls out a gift for me, one of the very few Gillis Point cloth bags she has left, with an image of her childhood lighthouse home.
Well, I'd say everything so far here has been a gift. It's just been...
Well, we're some lucky to be living here.
All set.
All our lives we have not had any strife or, you know, horrible things happen to us like people in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
If you think about the hereafter, you just wonder, why were we so fortunate?
Soon, in the setting surrounded by these warm-hearted creatives, even I join in the performing, with not a little help from Keith.
Across the endless sea, I would die in ecstasy.
But thankfully, Keith finally takes over as we sail back to the wharf, full of joy and music. And in a world that can create a moment like this, I have to agree with Bell. Anything seems possible here.
We don't like to talk about what lies in the depths below. What they do, the murderers and thieves, gone without a trace of the human low. No matter how low. Reach the bottom of the windmill. Put you in a barrel, put you in a barrel. Roll you down the single in the dead man's palm.
As always, we close out the show with a few travel tips in the region. You can explore all of the Cabot Trail easily from Bedeque in any direction. It's so central. And in Bedeque, you can sail anywhere in the Rodora Lakes with Paul at sailingcvi.com, including an overnight in Maskells Harbor. Definitely going to do that on my next trip there. Visit the Spruce Brewery for your suds, not too far south of town. And I loved staying at the Dunlap Inn in town, but the Telegraph, too, is also historic. I believe that's where Alexander Graham Bell stayed when he first visited the area. Yes, check out the scene with our friends at the Freight Shed. And please, please go to the Bell Museum. What a creative genius this man was. And I'm going to say I laughed out loud at a few of the inventions. CVIisland.com lists all kinds of kitchen party opportunities, like the one we had on Paul's boat. To get a more formal sense of fiddling and Highland culture, check out the performances at the nearby Gaelic College north of Bedeque. It is a non-profit educational institution located in the community of St. Anne's, you know, founded in 1938. Do the Cabot Trail loop by car, but don't miss the Skyline Trail. It takes about 2 hours. And I really like the little town of Neal's Harbor to the far north. Unbelievably exposed and windy. Some very brave lobster fishermen there. One I met in Halifax. Then there's the Celtic Lodge near North Bay Beach, which is insanely picturesque, with some great golfing nearby. Or on the western coast, dive into Acadian culture in Cheticamp. I have friends whose roots reach back there 10 generations. But again, at the center of everything you want to explore in Cape Breton, Bedeque makes a great home base. Oh, and required reading, Charlotte Gray's award-winning Reluctant Genius. What a compelling read. And finally, don't forget a couple of days in Halifax. The Citadel Museum has been completely revamped, very high-tech, and way more diverse perspective on Nova Scotia history. And that about does it for this show. Special thanks to Nova Scotia Tourism for their help on this show. Learn more at novascotia.com. Thanks to the wildly talented musician Keith Mullins. As always, thanks to Destination Canada for your ongoing support. Here and There is produced by Black Cabin Studio for Canadian Geographic Travel. You know, I think today we're going to give Keith the last word, or note, as the case may be. Take it away, Keith.
Oh.
Les Beattie, associate producer for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, is an award-winning Canadian-based feature writer, broadcaster, and podcaster. She produces and hosts the Canadian Geographic Travel documentary podcast, Here and There. Her work has won top honors multiple times for feature writing, broadcasting, and podcasting from both North American Travel Journalists Association and the Society of American Travel Writers. All her shows are produced by her production company, Black Cabin Studio. Liz has been a regular contributor to National Geographic magazine, books, and blogs for years. She also writes for The Guardian, Travel and Leisure, AARP, The Walrus, Toronto Life, and others. Liz has also been a regular on SiriusXM Canada for many years.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York, and in fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So yes, please support your local NPR station.